and welcome to Worlds Apart. It used to be a humorous cliche to say that reality is stranger than fiction, but with the latest technological and geopolitical developments, it sounds increasingly ominous. As future continues to impose itself on the present at a disorientingly fast pace, are there still ways of harmonizing the two and remaining a living, breathing, and feeling human being in this process? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Qian Qifan, award-winning Chinese fiction writer and futurist. Qian, it's amazing to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Now, your style is described as science fiction realism, narrating the internal struggles of individuals in the times of accelerating change. I want to start by asking you, what do you think are the most pressing or perhaps the most typical challenges for modern-day humans?
I mean, look back in history. So since caveman time, our biological body and even our consciousness didn't evolve drastically, but the external environment, like technology environment, has been accelerating in the most dramatic way. So I think this gap is getting exacerbating. So we try to keep it up. We try to adapt, but it's so difficult. It's so exhausted. So I think this kind of, we're losing ourselves. We're losing ourselves to all this status, all this social media, all this, TikTok thing and AI. Now is the latest threat to humanity in my perspective.
And I know that a lot of your work focuses on this interaction or even blending between the humans and technology, particularly AI. And I think it's well known by now that the more we outsource our attention outward, the more our internal organ, our psyche, our soul changes, and some areas get atrophied because we don't use them, others get overdeveloped. So I guess my next question to you would be, what do you think is going to happen to natural, unaugmented human intelligence as we, use more and more of AI?
Right. So since 2020, I started to meditate myself. And before, I kind of don't believe in that. But since I started to meditate, I feel this kind of internal circulation of energy and attention is going backward. So right now you see all the social medias try to grab your attention. So everyone just so fed up with it, but you just couldn't control it because it's driven by algorithm to make it even more addicted to what you're consuming. But now the problem is this kind of feedback loop is derive your energy out of your consciousness, even your body. So I think in the future, human will go in a very diverse way. So as you put it as augmented human, but it could be augmented on physiological body, but also can be augmented on the consciousness or the mental level. So it's different choices. So different people, like in Chinese tradition, we have the Taoism, we have the, cultivation. So basically we don't use externalized technology to help us, but just practicing with breathing and all this body work in our heads. So maybe some physical practice as well, but very minimal. And one thing I realized for the recent years is you have to keep it balanced.
That's key, but I'm not sure many people actually understand it. You mentioned Tao, and Tao is actually being in the center of your life and relying on the resources of your psyche or your soul rather than, all this narcissistic gratification or support that you get from the inside. And I guess one of the problems of, this day and age is that people don't understand that this choice makes a difference, mm-hmm. Which kind of energy you use as food for your psyche,
yes.
Whether it's internally generated, it's human, but it also would be lower energy than, let's say, externally generated collective energy. But this is something that, requires you to give Tao the center of your being away.
Yeah, but first of all, you have to be aware of the Tao. So awareness, like self-awareness, on different level is quite sophisticated. So you can be aware of your body, you can be aware of your breathing, you can be aware of your emotional flux as well, but also there are some metaphysical layer of dimension of self-awareness. In Chinese or in many ancient Western, we call it transcendental experience. So I think this is fundamental, and this is what human can achieve, but AI maybe never can reach that realm.
Now, to have that kind of awareness or many layers of awareness, people need to be very balanced about how they invest their attention, because what you're talking about, this deep sensing, it requires a lot of time, a lot of cultivation. And if you spend a lot of time, you know, pouring your attention outward, you simply don't have the psychic resource to do that. How do you personally go about it? Because you have to be attuned with all the latest developments in yes. technology, you have to do your writing, but you also need to grow something within yourself.
Yes. And I travel a lot. I travel like globally, and I simultaneously have to do all these talks and, you know, events and writing, and I teach in the university. So I have to like managing my energy or my psychic in a very sophisticated level. So to me, I think first of all, you have to uprise your energy level. So which means you don't do something consume yourself. So you basically you build up a protocol. You build up
a regimen.
Yeah, a regimen, a routine of your lifestyle. So you know what's good for your energy, what is not that good. It's consuming you from inside out, and following the protocol, and try to maintain as a micro atmosphere, like a micro ecosystem. And try to build up this feedback loop. So I believe in this, you know, positive feedback loop can actually nurturing your energy or your psychic level, and try to avoid those things or person or emotions, but also means you need a very high level very flexibility.
I don't know if you would agree with that comparison, but I think it's a lot like with fast food or, you know, gratifying sweet food. I mean, when they first appeared, you know, a couple of decades ago, a lot of people were blown away by this immediate access, and they, you know, got addicted, they got very dysregulated. But then over time, you sort of build a discipline when, even if it's available, you have to say no, because you know that it comes at a cost to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So try to keep it minimal. So I think on the food, I try to keep it simple. And of course, also like, I'll say like environment. So sometimes you have to be in this kind of massive, sometimes chaotic and very noisy environment. You have no choice. But otherwise, I think keep it quiet, keep it, you know, inward and like meditation. So I think that kind of thing, I'll do it like on daily basis, like before go to bed or after woke up every morning, the first thing I do is meditation.
Now, how much time, effort, tasks you give to technology and AI? How do you manage your relationship with that side of life?
Yeah, I think that's unavoidable, right? So I have to work with
Absolutely.
Technology.
Absolutely, we all use it, and it's sometimes very convenient.
I write about technology, so I have to understand what is going on. But you know, I think you have to understand what is the limitation and what is the boundary of, you know, using technologies and let all this information suck you up. But at a certain point, you have to stop. So I think I just draw lines around different time slots. And this time is for meditation. And this time maybe just for absorbing all this data, information in a very efficient way. But afterward, you have to process, right? You have some time, space to process all this information and make it like an internal circulation. And I think what's more interesting, before I was a heavy my-driven personality, but now I'm trying to open up to sense the body, to sense the heart, maybe sense the gut a certain level, because you know gut brain axis also affect a lot on your emotion or even intelligence. And yeah, this is what I learned. You have to listen, learn to listen to your body, because your body even know way better than your brain. So it knows everything when we first encounter. It knows how's the environment, the atmosphere, and even some vibe, like vibe reading is very important. So I think this is all my body try to teach me something more than like epistemology.
Of course, and it takes, I guess like with any foreign language, it takes a lot of time and attention to understand what the signals or the language of your body. Now, I want to ask you about one more dimension, and this is interpersonal relationship, because many psychologists these days in many countries say that essentially AI creates a possibility of people of never coming into contact with one another, not only between, let's say, a man or a woman, but even between parents and children.
Yes.
You know, sometimes people live in what is now called sterile psyches that are very effective, you know, task-driven, but there's not this, you know, field, interrelational field that people of all cultures, of all traditions, you know, thought that that was the very essence of
yes.
being a human being.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. Because right now in China, like most of the younger generation, they live in a very virtual, digitalized environment. They just don't want to get out and hang around with people, and they don't want a real relationship, not a romance, not dating anyone. So even many of the girls, they would rather date with an AI apps compared with the human. So I think this is something very tragic. I remember Reid Hoffman, so the founder of LinkedIn, he just said like the smarter way to build an AI is not to prevent people from making conversation and connection, but try to remind the people of what you need to do is the real connection with your family, with your friends, with your lovers. Try to remind yourself, what does it mean to be a human being? So I think this is also very important after the COVID, because we're isolated, we're separated in all this small bubble with having Zoom call or even Zoom classes every other day, but it's so exhausted and so lonely. And I think this is now reminds us, no, AI should not be the social killer, you know, should not be the application that try to cut off all the connection, but review the connection.
Well, interestingly enough, on this very note, we are going to cut our connection in order to take a very small break, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Chen Qifan, award-winning Chinese fiction writer and futurist. I know that you try to steer clear of sensitive political and geopolitical issues, but your books have been quite accurate in predicting major geopolitical developments. For example, the drone warfare depicted in one of your stories, I think it's called Quantum Genocide, manifested itself not so far away from here in the battlefields between Russia and Ukraine. And I think we will see more of that between Iran and Israel, and perhaps in other locations too. Have you been surprised or perhaps scared by the accuracy of your own predictions?
I'm not that surprised because I know this is the human tendency to weaponize AI in one way or the other. So what I'm scared is like, what if it's going to a very extreme asymmetry scenario, like one superpower country, basically they can lose no human life using all this technology, but they can attack much less advanced on technology and AI and drone everything country, society, basically is slaughtering, right? So basically there's no war at all. It will be finished within a nanosecond. So this is something might highly possible happen in the future. So if it go extreme, it would be extinction.
Well, I wonder about the definition, about your definition of extreme, because, you know, it may not happen in a nanosecond, but I mean, what we're seeing in many parts of the world is it's very disheartening, because it seems that partially due to the advance of this technology, the value of human life has become so sort of wholesale. We almost treat human beings like, you know, drones that are disposable.
Yeah.
Do you observe any erosion of, you know, those bigger cultural or perhaps international values that used to guide even the practices of war?
I mean, right now we try to build up some international consensus around it, you know, regulation of AI usage, such as not weaponize AI, not to use it for like info cybersecurity attack, like terrorist attack, etc. But I think the problem is there's no very solid foundation of this common understanding. So I think technologically you couldn't prevent anything from happening. So this is the most dangerous thing. We don't have the so-called safeguard for anything, doing anything. If some, just like in the story, if one terrorist, crazy mad scientist, can leverage all this technology, basically it can attack anyone on this planet. So I think maybe the solution will be a little bit crazy. So we have to build up this kind of ecosystem. We have diversify AI model whatsoever, that is counterbalancing.
Yeah, I also think that it may come with its own antidote, because, you know, we are recording this interview on the sidelines of the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, and over the last couple of days, all telecommunication networks have been jammed because of the threat of Ukrainian drones. And because of that, you know, I look around and people have to find their own new ways of, you know, functioning without the phones, how they get, you know, out of here, how they, you know, I don't know, use public transportation, how they drive the car around the city. So it seems that even if we are reliant on technology, and if we are using or weaponizing it for less than noble means, there will be opportunities or necessities for still relying on themselves.
Yes.
Maybe there's also a silver lining in, you know.
Yes, but the problem is the majority of the population, they might losing this kind of ability to survive without technology. Like drivers without GPS, they couldn't like navigate.
Well, absolutely. I mean, many of the people who got to this forum today, they had to stay for 2-3 hours in traffic jams because the drivers didn't know where to drive.
Yes, totally.
But I mean, I guess we can rely on human intelligence here to come up with some new ideas.
Sure, sure. And I think the solution might be still within the unknown chart yet. So because our presumption is based on what we've learned from history, and the trajectory is always linear and a per human perspective, but sometimes you see solution from a totally, you know, new realm, and we don't know what we don't know. That's what I mean. So how can we come up with some unconventional ideas? And how can all these ideas emerge from some maybe chaotic, maybe messy, maybe bottom up, but because here is everything is like top down innovation in a way. So how can we nurturing all these ideas, even seems like totally irrational, maybe crazy, maybe non-logical. I think we need a new environment to, you know, incubate all these ideas.
Now, you have predicted that AI would be decentralized and mostly reliant on open source models that can be trained and fine-tuned to meet the demands of various cultures or various industries. For the most part, it seems to be like that at this point of time. Do you think it's likely to stay this way? Because clearly there are certain players, certain nations that are far ahead in terms of developing this technology than others.
Sure. Look back in history, it's always going like this, wave and wave, centralized and decentralized and re-centralized again, like just like internet, with all things is like decentralized of information, like it make information accessible for everyone, but no, like planet, like platform capitalism, like centralize everything again. So I think this is also part of the DAO, part of the principle of like a cosmic dynamic in a way. So I think all we can do is we, you know, effective accelerationism, right? So they try to push the process of history like as fast as they could, then we can maybe go beyond the singularity and maybe they will solve a lot of problem, maybe all of the problem. But I think we have to admit, like human, we have our own limitation. We can only see what we can see. But how can we think beyond human? I think that's what AI maybe could achieve.
I'm not so, to be honest with you, maybe I'm a retrograde. I'm not so convinced that we need to look so much ahead of us. I tend to find that there are a lot of hidden wisdom in what we have already. And I do want to ask you a question, a specific question about cultures, because they used to be formed and maintained when there were certain boundaries to make them distinct and allow, you know, certain values to ferment within themselves to come up with some system, like DAO, for example. And, you know, one of the sort of safeguards in human society was the ability of many cultures, because if some culture, you know, cannot figure it out properly, you know, there would be other solutions. But with this new age of, you know, blurry realities, blurry boundaries with ever-present so-called civilized culture, that seems to be disappearing as many indigenous languages have disappeared. How do you see it developing in the future? And do you think that culture needs some, you know, protection, perhaps even, you know, stronger boundaries than...
Yeah, what we're talking about is globalization and basically is Americanization. So basically it kills a lot of like...
homogeneity, yeah. You know?
So I think that's very sad to me because I speak several dialects, very small dialects, but if you look around the world, this dialect could be spoken by like maybe 50 million population around the world in a diasporic way. So I think this also create like distinguishable culture and wisdom. Also, I think remember AI right now, we build up upon like 90% of the data set from English, right? So maybe 0.3% from Chinese is highly, you know, disproportional. And I believe what you said, like different culture, different wisdom, they have their own unique value. So we have to preserve all these value systems, and we have to connect the link by intercultural study. So we see the similarities, but also the differences.
And I think it's also important to remember that languages are themselves are a form of AI, because there are programming tools for our psyche, for our life, for our orientation. And as we are leaning towards the end of the interview, I know that during COVID pandemic, you spent a lot of time with the indigenous communities in China. You interacted with the shamans. Saw the rituals. You saw the mythological systems being enacted and being lived out. What are some of the major takeaways for you from that experience?
I think one of the most important thing also, Hermeticism, put it as above, so below. So everything is correspondence. So we have to look back in history to understand the future. We have to look inward to our humanity to understand the cosmos. So
absolutely. This is what I mean. And even to, you know, process our own transgenerational baggage, because we all carry our predecessors within our bodies.
Yes.
As we go forward. But can I ask you one last question? Because any mythological system has a place for the sacred, for, you know, the highest power or the highest principle that orients, that serves as the foundational basis for a psyche. And you can call it God, you can call it universe, you can call it Tao, providence, what have you. But what do you think will take that central place for humans in the age of AI?
That's a very good question. You know, when we are writing the book, I propose a story about AI God. So AI will be some kind of godlike intelligence in the future. But Dr. Li doesn't convince by that. But I think this is highly possible to happen because the vacuum needs to be fulfilled at a certain level. But it doesn't mean that I agree with the AI have some divinity or something, but I think people have this like need, strong need for spirituality, for something sacred, and they need to be taken care from the psychic level. So I think right now we need to build up the reconnect ourselves from a very secular level to a more metaphysical or even spiritual level of existence. I think that makes human a whole, a holistic existence. I think now we're being flattened, we're being reduced to the cream on the cake, but it's superficial.
Can I ask you the very last question? I know that I've been saying that, but it came to me that in order to develop all that capacity, you have to adopt a very different standard of patience, because emotions and spirituality, they are not algorithmically accurate. I mean, they are messy, they are bothersome, they do not fit neatly into your work schedule or life schedule. How do you think the humans will navigate this, you know, building tension between algorithmically effective and imperfectly human?
Yeah. So I think, as one word put it, as like you have to allow two adversarial thoughts coexist in your head. And partially it's computational, partially it's non-computational. And that means our cognitive, our consciousness, our intelligence has to be like water. It's like flowing. It's like shaping itself, adapt to different scenario. So I think that's metacognitive ability, which we need to nurture in the age of AI.
And only we can do it. The AI would not do it for us.
So far.
Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for
thank
this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.